now, let's pretend. My name is Richard Lamparsky, and sitting here in the studio with me is a very pretty girl by the name of Sybil Trent, and a gentleman by the name of Arthur Anderson, and I'll say he's good-looking so he won't be offended.
Do say
because
that.
They're both actors. Thank
you.
And have been for some time, even though they're hardly middle-aged. They were... Tell us how long you were on Let's Pretend, Miss Trent.
Well, I was on Let's Pretend for 20 years. Let's Pretend was on for 24 years, so I was considered one of the babies on the show.
Arthur?
I think I was on for 19 years. In fact, I know I was on for 19 years.
Well, let's play a game called Let's Return Now. We have here, fortunately due to Mr. Anderson, a recording of the love theme from Let's Pretend.
The theme song, the theme song,
yes. Fairy Tale by Comzac.
And we're going to play it to see if we can get them in the mood. Ready?
Hello, hello, come on, let's go. It's time for Let's Pretend. The gang's all here and standing here is Uncle Bill, your friend. The story is exciting from start right to the end. So everyone come join the fun. Come on and let's pretend.
From New York City, it's radio's outstanding children's theater, Let's Pretend.
Well, that put you in the mood?
It sure did.
It has me in the mood. God, that does take you back. How long has it been off the air?
The last broadcast of Let's Pretend was October 23rd, 1954.
Boy, that's a good memory. Were you on it?
I was on it, and I was always sorry, Sybil, that was not one of our happiest stories. Jorinda and Joringel were a pair of lovers who were changed into birds by a wicked witch.
Oh, yeah.
And they never did get back to their original form, did they? It's one of the few stories that did not really have a happy ending.
No, most of the stories had a moral and a happy ending.
That's right. They were promised that they would be returned to human form some years hence, but it wasn't that easy to break the spell, as I recall. Mm. And I thought to myself, if only we could end our Let's Pretend career with a happier story.
That's
but
true.
You can't have everything.
No.
But we did have quite a career. And now I sound like an old fogey reminiscing. I remember.
Yes, well, I purposely mentioned that none of us, I must say, none of us here are, over 40.
We're young fogies.
Yes, we started very... I didn't start very young. I started listening. I was tuned in. I think by way of explanation for the young people who listen to this program, which they do for some reason...
Good.
Let's Pretend was on Saturday mornings, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
At 11:05.
From coast to coast.
From coast to coast, 100 and whatever...
And to armed services during the war.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes, 100 special services.
Well, so is this program.
Oh,
so.
My...
And it was directed
by a
very talented woman by the name of Nyla Mack, God rest her soul.
Yes, she not only directed, she wrote the show, she produced the show.
And created the whole
idea,
Tell me if I'm wrong about this, Sybil. I think the show was already on the air when Nyla Mack joined, was hired by the Columbia Broadcasting System in another form, in a very crude form, and I'm told, this is before my time, that she rewrote the stories. Of course, all these old fairy stories are in the public domain, so anyone can rewrite them who wants to, and of course they're doing it all the time still, and mostly very badly. The program was then called Helen and Mary, was it?
That's right, yes, and it was Patricia Ryan and Glenn Davies, or it was Del Levy. She changed her name later on.
And that Nyla really... Nyla was the widow of an actor had done... shows on the actual old showboats. And now, you may know this, and correct me if I'm wrong, he died, and here was an out-of-work actress, and somebody said, why don't you do this children's program for Columbia Broadcasting System? I think they'd hire you. And she's reputed to have said, I hate children. What do I want to do a children's program for?
I don't remember that part.
Well, this story I heard. And she later found that she not only liked children, but liked radio, and liked writing and directing children.
She was like a second mother to all of us, actually.
And she could be very crusty.
She could
be. And very loving.
But very loving, very big-hearted. And
well, what mother can't be tough?
That's how it ought to be.
Few of them can't be soft, but all of them can be tough.
Nyla Mack was a short, pudgy woman with what I call thyroid eyes. Her eyes were sort of bulgy, and she had blonde hair, which in some of our old photographs was bobbed, because that's they're old photographs.
Yes, that's right.
And she had a great bubbling sense of humor.
I have a wonderful photograph of her standing between the two, Billy and Bobby Mock.
Oh, yes, the twins.
In that respect, I wonder if it would be time now to mention the names of some of the actors who were in our stock company,
yes,
which is what it really was.
Because they all got billing, as I remember, on the shows.
At the end of the program, yes, we always mentioned
well,
them.
When the program started, we were all children, and very small children. I started when I was 12. Sybil started when you were what?
I'm not going to tell. I was very young.
And
I could
the announcer would say the prince was played by 12-year-old... And then I'd say, Arthur Anderson. And they always gave the ages. And then as we grew up and got married and had families, they stopped giving the ages because it got a little bit silly.
It's kind of an interesting story. We used to have a studio audience. And in the later years, after we had grown up, people would come to see the show, and they'd come backstage, and they'd ask for an autograph. And they'd look at me, and they'd say, you're Sybil Trent, and they'd have a little girl or a little boy with them asking for the autograph, you know, and Mama was along, and they'd say, you're Sybil Trent, why, we used to listen to you when we were children, and of course it makes you feel like you're so old.
Yeah.
But the fact is that we were children, too, at the time, and we had just grown up.
Oh, how funny. Larry Buster Crabb told me a couple of weeks ago on the show, as I remember, that he is the aquatic director at the Concord Hotel, and he said he was cut out of the pool quite recently, and as he was drying off, two ladies walked by, and one said, do you know that man? That's Larry Buster Crabb, who was a great film star when I was a little tiny girl. He said, I looked at these two broads. He said, they were older than I am.
Yeah. Let's pretend when the... originally, there was a little five-piece string orchestra, which would play, and eventually we got a sponsor, Cream of Wheat. And then that was when they added words to the song, wasn't it, Sybil?
That's right, yes.
And the words were sung by Sybil and by Gwen Davies.
Mm-hmm.
And the handsome prince was usually Albert Alley or sometimes Bill Lipton. And it was never me, I know that. I was always
You did all the wonderful character parts.
I would usually be an old man who would say, if you pass through the dark forest and knock on the magic stone three times... an enchanted frog will come out, and he will tell you how to get to the cave of the ogre.
Yeah.
So I was a very essential part of these stories. Did it ever bother you
that you were not a sex symbol, we can say now?
Well, I didn't think of it in those terms in those days.
No, but now.
It didn't, because I had much more fun doing those parts, the parts that I did do. And, of course, let's not get into personality problems, except to say that if you do a character part, you're always hiding behind a mask. You can use a cracked voice or a booming voice, and you are never playing yourself. But when you're playing a prince or a romantic lead, you're usually playing straight, as it's called in the theater. You're not putting on a false face in any sense of the word. And I think I would have been very uncomfortable playing the prince for this reason. I was a rather insecure person. It was much more fun to be an old man with a cracked voice.
I think what was wonderful about Let's Pretend was that Nyla chose the children who were on it because of their individuality.
That's true.
In other words, Arthur could do all the character things, and Albert Alley mostly did the prince. Once in a while, he'd get a chance to do a character thing.
Right.
But... she didn't believe in a star system. In other words, if I were the princess one Saturday, next week I might be a little dwarf or something.
The Wicked Witch.
No, the Wicked Witch or something, because she never believed in getting a swell head, so to speak. You know,
she wanted you to just...
And
when we did get swell heads, she would call us down.
She certainly would.
Must have been hard to avoid, because you were, you know, exceptional children and professional children.
There was the most wonderful feeling on Let's Pretend that I've ever had anywhere in my whole life amongst people. We grew up together like a family, except that
That's
we
right.
didn't have the thing that most families have, the kids fighting with each other and feeling jealous of one another. We truly loved each other very much, and I remember if I would get a call to do a radio program and I wasn't quite right for the part, why, I'd recommend Gwen or Miriam,
mm-hmm.
and
sure.
there was none of this jealousy thing, you know, that you often had in the
That's
theater.
That's true.
It was just the nicest feeling. If the show was loved by people, it's because we love doing it.
Do you think you were precocious children now?
Definitely.
Oh, well, I guess all theater children are precocious children.
They tell me they have one now that isn't in The Yearling, the musical version of The Yearling. A friend of mine saw it out of town, and they purposely chose somebody because he had no stage presence and no particular... He didn't seem to know where the audience was. This is in the press releases. And
let's hope he doesn't find out where the audience is, and enough people tell him he's wonderful, he may become spoiled. But
a friend of mine saw it. Out of town, and I said, "Is he all these things?" He said, "Yes, he's also very bad."
Oh well.
Well, I guess there's a moral in that you could spend two programs discussing. I found that some of the greatest creative artists I know, the few that I know personally, can also be very difficult people. They're not bland people.
No.
They've got egos. Sometimes the egos make them obnoxious to get along with, and sometimes the egos are soft-pedaled, but the ego is still there.
Anna Sosenko told me something I'll never forget, and certainly she should know it if anyone should, having handled Hildegard and some of the big names she did. She said it took her a long time to realize it, but once it came to her, it fell with a deafening thud that... Thank you.
I
do deafening thuds for a small charge.
What she said was that what a person creates has really nothing whatever usually to do with what they are as a human being. And that is so true. Sometimes it happens to click that a beautiful artist is a marvelous, marvelous person, but it doesn't always.
Well, when I've seen greatly talented artists who were perfectly terrible human beings, I've said to myself, this isn't right, that morally right or anything, that this person should have this person does not deserve to succeed as he has.
Exactly.
You can't put it in those terms because they do succeed and they give great joy and pleasure to the people who hear them play or see them act or whatever it happens to be.
Well, I always thought that if I could write a song and lyrics, I would write one called Don't Let Your Son Go Backstage, Mr. Worthington. I think if you're a fan, you better stay in the fourth row center, because that's very jarring to go backstage and meet those people after you've seen them.
Meet the egos. Mm. Of course, it sounds as if we're disparaging all our friends or creative people, but... As I was saying, sometimes an ego coming out can be an ugly thing, and sometimes it can be a good thing and make that person a much more alive person.
Right.
Because I'm talking about psychoanalytic jargon that I know nothing about, but I know that it's necessary to have an ego. If you didn't have any ego, well, you probably would just not get out of bed in the morning.
I gather you've never been psychoanalyzed.
Not in those terms, no.
Because I think you're the first child actor I've interviewed who hadn't been.
Who hadn't been?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I have.
You have? Oh,
sure. So I'm joining.
I don't mean to ask personal questions, but usually they volunteer that. It kind of surprised me when you...
Oh, I probably would have volunteered it sooner or later. Everybody does.
Isn't everybody?
How else are we going to spend all that money we made in Let's Pretend? We've got to put it to some use.
In those young years.
Were there any stage mothers around in those programs?
Yes, and Nyla knew just how to handle them, didn't she?
Yes, she did very well. They really meant well.
Of course they meant well.
You know.
For their own child, I'd
say. They surely did. I went to professional children's school, so did the author. And you'd very often meet a mother who'd say, "Oh, you're going out on a call today. Who are you going to see, and how old is the part, and are there going to be any cast changes?"
Yeah.
Not so much with the mothers of Let's Pretend, I don't think, as, some of the others, but it was there to a certain extent.
Well, also, you could spend hours analyzing the reasons why is a stage mother... Why does a mother want her child to go on the stage or on radio or television, and why does she have this burning desire, which will sometimes manifest itself in actually grabbing the director by the lapels? Or you remember, the redheaded stage mother used to sit on the third floor of NBC, whose son's name I will not
remain nameless.
whose name shall remain nameless. Anyway, she she would wait till the radio director would pass by, and she'd get up and stop and just plant herself in front of him and say, haven't you got any work for my son? And it worked. Of course, he happened to be very talented.
It was harder when the child had to do that, go up and say, don't you have a job for me?
I remember, of course, the third floor at NBC, in the days when it was a radio studio and was the great gathering place for the actors. You could use the lavatory there, you could get a drink of water, you could see your friends, you could call your message service. They had free lines, they still do have them. And when I was a child actor, I met a young actor that I'd worked with. He was about 15 years old, just an in-between, very awkward age. I don't even remember his name, which is symbolic, I guess. Mm. And he wasn't really very talented, but he was sitting there looking as if he'd lost his last friend. I said, what's the matter? He said, my mother told me not to come home until I had a job.
Oh, dear.
Now, what kind of pressure is that?
How frightening.
Of course, we also have the stories of the families, the entire families, living off the earnings of the child actor and taking all the money.
Well, hadn't the Coogan Law not been passed then? I don't remember when that went through, but
California law.
I think it was just movies.
I we should explain that, too. It was because of Jackie Coogan, wasn't it?
Because
he had earned something like $4.5 million and ended up
with not very much of a
furnished room and sued his mother and didn't get a penny.
Right. Yeah.
And she lived in the mansion until the day she died. Well, listen, did we say what you all do? Because we didn't say that Arthur Anderson was an actor, right?
Well, we assumed that we were actors. We assumed everybody knew this, but of course, how would they know it?
Exactly.
Let's pretend it's been off the air 11 years.
And Sybil Trent, you are acting again?
I'm doing commercials on television. But basically, I'm a mother and a wife now. I have two wonderful boys, 10 and 12 years old.
Are many of the kids who were on Let's Pretend actors and actresses?
I was saying before the program to Sybil that I think that she and I are almost the only members of the cast of Let's Pretend who are now full-time performers. It might be interesting to go over the list of some of the actors who are on Let's Pretend,
which
might
ring a bell in the minds of people. I think this is so strange, though, because it was such a wonderful training ground for actors and actresses.
Definitely.
Surprising. Well, you tell us.
All right, let's start with Uncle Bill Adams, who was our master of ceremonies, and of course, whenever I would hear the voice, something like that, and whenever I would see Bill, I would always say, good advice. And the reason was that he had done a commercial for Doane's Pills, and in the dramatized commercial, one man would say to the other, you look terrible, Jim, why don't you get Doane's Pills? And Bill would come in with, good advice, get Doane's Pills today. And I don't think he likes me to remind him of that because he hasn't done the commercial for some time. But he was a wonderful gray-haired gentleman who had the wonderful fatherly quality and a beautiful voice.
Marvelous.
He, by the way, used to always do the voice of Franklin Roosevelt on the old March of Time programs, which
radio
were dramatized.
I never knew that.
Bill Adams was always Franklin Roosevelt.
And then we have Bill Lipton.
Bill Lipton.
He's now in England. He has a son, and they're living in England. Jack Grimes.
Jack Grimes is still a performer.
Yes, indeed.
But he also works for a recording studio. He's an executive with Olmsted Studios.
And he nearly joined us today.
Yes, sir.
He tried.
He tried his best, but business is business, and he just couldn't spring himself from the duties of the studio. He wanted to. Jack always played the little guy, the wise guy.
Jack and the Beanstalk.
And Jack and the Beanstalk. He was always Jack who went up the beanstalk. And he has a very method of delivery. Peppy.
Oh, it's wonderful.
Full of vitality, and he's a great comedian. He used to play, what did he play on the Aldrich Family on radio? He played Homer, didn't he?
Now,
as distinct from television. Now,
Jack Kelk was on television.
Jack Kelk is another Let's Pretender that
was
mentioned on your program recently, I believe.
On Gene Muir's show, said, whatever happened to Jack Kelk? And we didn't answer, and I should have, because I knew he works for Compton Advertising.
That's right, he's a producer, and he's hired me a couple of times, and it's so funny to be
hired. He's got a wonderful beard now.
Times have changed. All right, who's next?
Mike O'Day.
Anderson.
Oh, Arthur Anderson, you wrote your name. We know about you. Mike O'Day is living in New Jersey, and he works for the state there, I believe.
He works for the Federal Social Security Office. And last I heard, he was also a disc jockey for an Asbury Park radio station in his spare time. And he has a... he was a short fellow. Was. I why do I say was about all these people? It's automatic because the program is off the air.
Mm-hmm.
Had a beautiful voice, a beautiful resonant voice. And he is a very talented actor who would play any part that I could play. He would...
Yes, you sort of took turns of being the ogre, I remember.
Yeah, we were ogres.
I remember that so well. And... Here's
Bob Reddick. Now, he is very much active as a performer. And he would often play sinister parts. Cagliostro, the magician. I don't know if his name was ever Cagliostro.
And also the absent-minded kind of thing, which he did very well in Rumpelstiltskin.
The absent-minded king, yes.
Yes.
Who gets up and thinks he's looking in the mirror, and then he's grown a black beard overnight, and he's holding the hairbrush.
The hairbrush.
And all the kids scream with laughter. It was a fun.
It was wonderful.
Kingsley Colden is now an executive with an advertising agency. He was another one who often played the handsome prince.
And I had such a crush on him when I was a little girl. And I had a crush on him and Jack Rhimes both. It was kind of, you know, I couldn't make up my mind which one.
You really had a problem there.
I did.
Betty Jane Tyler. It's a cute little girl who is now married to a lawyer and lives in Connecticut, right?
Has two children, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And Marilyn Erskine.
Well, of course, she has done pictures in Hollywood since then.
And she's been on a television series with Tom Ewell, I think, was the mm-hmm. last one.
Daisy Olden, I'd say, was an assistant witch. Miriam Wolf was the
That's
chief witch.
That's right. She's chief witch.
Tell about Miriam Wolf. Why did we mention her?
Miriam is living in Paris now,
mm-hmm.
and she has a little boy. She doesn't work anymore, but the little boy keeps her pretty busy. He's very bright.
You say that to any housewife. She doesn't work anymore, and the housewife will say, oh, yeah, try washing the clothes.
You're so right. But Daisy Olden, we didn't mention about Daisy. She's becoming a poetess of quite a bit of a reputation now.
Really? That I didn't know. I knew that she was involved with a poetry game.
At the Library of Congress or something. She's really coming up.
Mm-hmm.
And Will Patricia Ryan.
The Mauck twins have been mentioned on your program, haven't they?
I think they have, but let's say again, they are film cutters in Hollywood. One's with Warners and one freelances.
Maybe the film they might be remembered for would be the Prince and the Pauper.
Yes, that would be their most popular film, although they made Penrod and his twin brother and several others.
That's true.
Gee, they were good, very good-looking boys.
Very.
But another less pretender who is still very active in the business out on the West Coast is Walter Tetley. He was Leroy on the Great Gildersleeve on the radio.
Gildersleeve was on a few months ago. In my
Harold Peary?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And Walter still... Any actor who's still active on either coast, you'll find is very much involved in making commercials for radio or television. And I'm very active in that, and that's the greatest part of my work now. I just wish there were some radio shows.
How do you feel sitting here, you know, in this radio studio? I mean, how long has it been since you've done this? Not just being interviewed, but done a radio show.
Well, it's been about 10 years for me, I'd say.
The last, Let's Pretend, believe it or not, was the last live radio show I did. And the last broadcast of Let's Pretend was October 1954. I've done other shows since then, but they haven't been live. They've been recorded, which is a little bit... different. The feeling that you're on the air and that what you say now is going to be heard from coast to coast is quite different from the feeling that if I make a mistake, it's only a recording and they'll stop and we'll do it that part over again. The tension, which I think is a good thing, is not the same, is absent.
Well, in those days, and Let's Pretend days, they were nearly always live, weren't they?
Yes,
Let's Pretend
they were
was always
live.
Live.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Most of the shows were, though.
Oh.
There were very few in the last few years. I think they started canning some of people who were going on vacations. But
that's
the,
right.
The
but
practice was
originally
to do it
live. The networks had strict prohibition against anything recorded. And that's why, was it the 3-hour time difference between the East
California,
and West Coast?
That's right.
There always used to be repeats for the coast. And so you'd do a show at 8 o'clock, and then you'd have to come back to the studio and do it again at 11 o'clock. And you would hear all sorts of stories about actors who forgot to come back, or actors who came back having had a couple of drinks, and the things that happened as a result of that. But
In the old days of radio, when we had studio, in the good old days, We used to have studio audiences, and if you did a nighttime program, why, we dressed
the,
for them.
The men were in tuxes.
The men were in tux.
Yes.
And that three-hour period when you didn't quite know what to do with yourself, we usually went to the Radio City Music Hall,
sure,
I remember,
and
saw a movie, and then came back and did the show.
That's right. Well, it's hard to explain the glamour of radio now that radio has, with the exception of this station and a few others, has become mostly a means of playing records and commercials and the news. And the glamour of network radio, and especially nighttime radio, when there was no television, was, I think radio itself has been called the theater of the imagination, and I think Let's Pretend fits that description very well.
Perfectly.
You know, to this day, I can walk into a store where somebody will know that I was on Let's Pretend, and they'll start to sing the theme song, and they'll say, oh, gee, what a shame they don't bring Let's Pretend back, because our kids sit and watch that idiot box all day and all night long, and they don't use their imaginations. And the wonderful thing about Let's Pretend was you could picture what the prince looked like, and you saw that castle.
And you could form your own picture. Somebody else would form his own picture.
That's right, and when the fairy godmother said to Cinderella, you may go to the ball and you're dressed and such and such a thing, you saw it in your mind, and it was marvelous.
Yeah, one, and unlike television, the scenery wasn't tacky or the costumes weren't bad, and the leading lady was not overage. Did you ever send away for any of the offers?
Oh, yes, I remember Orphan Annie had a shaker mug for a
I have day. One.
Do you really?
Yes, I have
oh,
one. But the cow is perfect. I have a Shirley Temple mug also and a creamer, and I'm looking for... The manager of this station gave me a creamer as a gift. He heard I needed one because I had a mug. I'm looking for the cereal bowl, but with a very good decal.
Well, no,
because if you're going to have a Shirley Temple cereal bowl, you want
it. It just so happens that my father-in-law used to be a grocer, and he has in his attic in Linden, New Jersey, a whole crate full of Shirley Temple cereal bowls. Would you like one?
Has he really? Oh, God.
That sounds like a
love you. Oh, how wonderful.
What a small world.
If you play your cards right, if I play my cards, I'll ask him, and we'll see if we can arrange it.
What a wonderful thought, yes. Well, I had the glow-in-the-dark Green Hornet ring also.
Oh, boy.
Let's pretend
and
never gave anything
ring?
Away, unfortunately.
No, let's pretend didn't. And but you know, it was a good many years before we were sponsored, mainly because Nyla wouldn't allow Let's Pretend to be sponsored by any sponsor that she couldn't believe in as being a good thing for children to listen to. Remember that?
That's it, yes. I thought it was CBS that said that Let's Pretend
well,
was not for Nyla, sale.
Nyla was mostly.
But those were the days before the dollar meant everything. Of course, the network had to make a living and wanted to make a profit. But they had a certain dignified, well, such as the thing, no recordings could be used. That was, you may sound very stodgy, but NBC and CBS both had this dictum, no recordings. And by the same token, Let's Pretend was not for sale. And CBS had a program called the American School of the Air. 5 mornings a week was broadcast into schoolrooms. And that was a public service program, of course, and that was not for sale. But on, I cannot help comparing television with radio, because I've been very much involved in both. There are very few things on television that are not for sale. Of course, that's because it costs them so many thousands of dollars to put the thing on the air for even 1 minute, so I guess it has to be that way.
Let's Pretend had been approached. They wanted Nyla to do Let's Pretend on television in the early years of television. And they wanted her to do it as an animated cartoon using our voices as a kind of a voiceover. And she wouldn't hear of it. She said that absolutely not. Unless Let's Pretend could be done properly, it wasn't going to be done at all.
That was going to be my next question about the sponsorship, because it was sponsored, as I recall, by Cream of Wheat.
For 9 years.
Yes.
9 years.
And the theme that we heard at the beginning of the program, you know, wasn't really, it was the right tune, but it wasn't the lyrics that I remember.
That's true. Let's see if we can remember that.
Yeah.
Cream of wheat is so good to eat, yes, we have it every day. We sing this song, it will make us strong, and it makes us shout, hooray! It's good for growing babies and showing us to eat. For all the family's breakfast, you can't beat cream of wheat.
Oh, I thank you both very much for being here to begin with, and certainly for taking me back with that. It's
Sybil Trent, and Mr. Arthur Anderson.
Could I just say one closing word?
Please do.
I don't want to get the impression that we are feeling maudlin about this. I can't speak for Sybil, but we're very glad that we did Let's Pretend for all those years, and I think it meant a lot to our childhoods as people as well as actors. I learned a lot as an actor on Let's Pretend. And in a way, I'm sorry it's gone, but yet this had to be because of what has happened to radio as a medium. And I used to have dreams about being back on Let's Pretend, and I don't have the dreams anymore. So I guess that my subconscious has adjusted itself. How about your subconscious?
Well, it'll always be a very important part of my whole life. I'll always love Let's Pretend. And who can tell? Maybe in a few years there'll be a Let's Pretend again.
Oh, no, maybe there'll be a new medium that'll come along to replace television.
I bring back the imagination. That's what I'd like to
see. The imagination.
Whether it be on radio or television or movies.
Right.
Well, you know who's on next week?
Who?
One of the biggest torch singers ever, Libby Holman.
Oh, that'd be wonderful.
So, yes, you must tune in when we'll find out whatever happened to Libby Holman.